Business, big and small, is shaping our economy, our present and our future. But it's a loud and busy world out there, and you need voices you trust to unpack the big stories and ask the right questions. I'm Carrington Clark, host of the new podcast, ABC Business Daily. Monday to Thursday, we take the big business stories and break them down. What happened? Why it happened? Who it helps? Who it hurts? Search for ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wandering Country, I'm Luke Sidham Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, the government swings big with tax changes. It's similar to what former Labor leader Bill Shorten took to the electorate 7 years ago when he lost to Scott Morrison.
Do you feel vindicated?
Yeah, I do actually.
In what way?
I shouldn't use the I word, but in 2016 and 2019, we took tax reforms to the electorate, and I think that we were probably ahead of our time.
So as well as the Federal Treasurer, his shadow and analysis from political and economics correspondents, you're also going to hear from the former Labor opposition leader, Bill Shorten. Then, who's saying they've missed out in the federal budget?
There is absolutely nothing that is going to provide even the slightest relief to the devastating living cost hikes that we are trying to cope with. And we are now seeing consecutive years of the Albanese government utterly failing to even try and live up to its promise on leaving no one behind.
The co-founder of the Anti-Poverty Centre will be here later on. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, it is the day after the federal budget, and the government has certainly taken a big swing. The Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, raising taxes on investment properties and some trust funds, going against what the government promised during last year's election campaign. Wherever you turn today, you'll hear words like ambitious, reforming, also disappointing, and broken promises. But on this show, you're going to hear why one person feels vindicated. That is what Bill Shorten told Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast this morning. But before we get to his comments, the context. Our political correspondent, Tom Crowley, started us off with some of the major changes that are in this federal budget.
The intergenerational pitch is at the heart of that. It's, I suppose, a bid that young people are angry enough about the housing crisis, and that Australians in general feel that it's important enough that the breach of trust, if you like, from breaking that promise is worthwhile. And 75,000 new homeowners to be created over the next decade, that's the key headline that he's selling there. This is about getting more homeowners and fewer investors. That is, as I say, over a decade. These changes to negative gearing in the capital gains tax tracked reasonably close to what was expected. The same for trusts, a 30% minimum tax on trust distributions, all three elements of Labor's 2019 policy, more or less back in a slightly similar shape. There are some differences. While negative gearing is fully grandfathered, capital gains is not. New gains on existing properties will start to rack up a tax liability from next year. And so over time, that means that it's not just future investors who can't take advantage of the more generous capital gains tax discount, but it starts to happen for old ones as well. It's not just an intergenerational pitch, and I think that's worth saying. This is not just about age, and one of the other arguments that Labor made in 2019, which is going to make a comeback. This is about wealth as well. It was kind of an extraordinary chart in the budget, and describing charts on the radio is not normally great radio.
Give it a shot.
this one is so stark. It shows the lifetime income of people over the last 25 years and who has benefited from capital gains, negative gearing and trusts. And the top 1% is a skyscraper and everything else is really close to the ground. It's quite extraordinary.
That is a very quick overview from Tom Crowley. We'll have more analysis from him later on, and you'll hear from the federal opposition. So these tax changes that Bill Shorten took to the election 7 years ago saw him defeated by Scott Morrison at the ballot box. Last night, the Treasurer announced changes to CGT and negative gearing, breaking his government's promise at the 2025 election not to touch investment property taxes. Here is a snippet of our interview with Jim Chalmers this morning, and you can hear how he's weighing the political risk of this decision.
The former Labor opposition leader Bill Shorten found out the hard way that there are political risks to making change to negative gearing and capital gains tax. Why are you confident that Australian voters will be with you?
Well, of course there are. These changes are contentious. There's no use pretending otherwise. But
It's the right thing to do. The easiest thing that we could have done from a political point of view would be to see these challenges in the housing market, particularly for young people, and to see the issues in the tax system and to leave everything exactly as it was. And we didn't think that was an acceptable outcome. Too many young people are being locked out of the housing market. And so we've taken these difficult decisions to try and address that.
Treasurer Jim Chalmers there. You can hear more of his interview on ABC Listen. Well, anticipating these changes, we lined up an interview with the former Labor opposition leader, Bill Shorten. And here's how Sally started the interview with him.
Bill Shorten, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Good morning. Good to talk to you, Sally.
Do you feel vindicated?
Yeah, I do, actually.
In what way?
I shouldn't use the I word, but in 2016 and 2019, we took tax reforms to the electorate. And I think that we were probably ahead of our time. And I do think this is important for the nation. So it actually isn't really about me or Labor. It's about how do we make sure that the housing sector is not a distortion of the tax sector, and that first home buyers, when they go and bid on houses, are not competing with tax-funded investors.
What's different now that gives you confidence that Labor can get these changes in place?
Well, one, they're in government. That's a prerequisite. But two, there's been a pretty big demographic and attitudinal shift. In 2019, half the electoral roll were baby boomers or older. Now that's probably around 30% of the voting roll. So there's been a demographic shift. But I think more than that, really from Gen X down, a lot more Australians are renting because they're locked out of the housing market. And that's a big issue. I mean, in Sydney, what, 40% of people are renters? In Melbourne, nearly that. And the Brisbane and Perth property markets are higher priced than Melbourne. So the trajectory is unfavourable for renters.
How does Labor sell this to the public when it is clearly a broken promise from the last election?
Oh, the last thing the current government need is an ex-leader saying, do this, do that. But I do believe that the principles of the changes are fair. This is very like our 2016 and 2019 policies in terms of capital gains tax, in terms of negative gearing, in terms of trusts. And I think the proposition is it's a long-term reform. It's not a quick sort of change. Anyone who's currently negatively geared be able to earn income under the same tax laws. So under the old laws that they initially invested under. So it's not unfair. It's a slow ramp in. The trusts, well, this is really creating a tax rate of the company, company tax rate essentially. So the changes are quite fair and they're not sudden or abrupt. And I think that's, people have got to ask, what's the national interest as opposed to my own self-interest? And people's self-interest is still served. I mean, property's still going to be a good investment this morning as it was last night before the budget. It's just curing a distortion and negative gearing where if you have enough money, you can get more money from the taxpayer to compete against people who don't own their first home. And I think the great Australian dream of owning a home is a worthy one and needs to be, that flame needs to be kept alive, not smothered under a tax system.
The changes that were announced last night in the budget, do they go far enough in your view?
I think they're good changes. To be honest, they were the policy. If we'd won in 2016 or 2019, it's pretty much what I would have done. So I'm not going to. Yeah, I think they're fine. They're modest. They're not massive. But it does send a message that, I mean, the core of this whole story is a simple proposition. Why should people who are pay-as-you-go tax income payers pay higher rates of pay than people who've just got bundles of property and assets? Why is it that a plumber, a nurse, a journalist, a lawyer, a teacher, a doctor pay higher rates of tax when they go to work every day than someone who just sits on a pile of assets and just sells them down the track and gets taxpayer support in between?
Was it the right decision, in your view, for Labor to drop the negative gearing and capital gains tax policies after the 19 election?
Well, that was the decision of the leadership. I accepted at the time that we'd tried a certain approach. It hadn't been successful. And, of course, you've got to do this. You can only make change from government, not from opposition. So I'm not going to second-guess the path by which we've got here. I feel that the policies we put forward in 2016 and 19 were pretty good. There's nothing here about franking credits being done. That's been dropped. I accept that. Listen, we've got here, and I think it's a good thing, and I think the sun's come up this morning, although behind the clouds in Canberra. Chickens are still laying eggs, and property will still be a good bet in Australia, and What we will, though, have is a greater sliver of fairness for first home buyers.
You were the minister for the NDIS, which will see $184 billion in funding stripped out over a decade. Do you think that is achievable?
Well, I haven't looked at all the fine numbers of the current budget night on the NDIS, but the trajectory of growth when Labor came to power in 2022, the scheme has grown by 22%. That was too much. Just too much. It's a great scheme changing lives, but the growth rate was too high. I know in the first term we got growth down from 22% to 9%, but that was never going to be the destination. It still had to be reduced. So I hope that the scheme reforms can work as promised. I mean, at the core of the NDIS, it's changing lives for the better, but it wasn't ever meant to be the only sort of lifeboat in the ocean.
Former Labor opposition leader Bill Shorten there. He is now the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Canberra. So what does the opposition make of the government's tax changes being welcomed by Bill Shorten on Radio National Breakfast? Sally asked the Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson if he thinks these measures will make a difference getting young people into the housing market.
Well, that's quite easy to answer because the budget documents answer it for us. According to the government's own budget documents, 35,000 fewer homes will be built as a consequence of these tax changes. The Treasurer has been at pains to say that supply is the big problem we have with housing. And in fact, what the budget documents also confess is that because of these tax changes, rents will likely go up. So young Australians will be kneecapped on multiple fronts. As they're saving for a deposit, they're going to pay higher rents. Then the government is going to apply more taxes on their first home deposit if it's invested. And they're going to then go on and build fewer homes, which means that it's going to be less likely young Australians to be able to buy one.
The Treasurer argues that this package should be taken as a whole, and when things like the Local Infrastructure Fund are included, that will increase supply. Do you accept those numbers?
Well, that's not what his budget documents confess, and that's the problem. There's a lot of
spin
around.
That says there'll be another 65,000 there in net that it will go up overall.
Actually, 75, and it actually says it about the number of people who want to and be homeowners, but it doesn't have any real basis behind that. But what the government's own documents do show is, one, they are going to increase rents. Two, they are going to tax people who invest their first home deposits so they can try and bring the future forward. And three, they're going to build fewer homes by confession of their own documents.
When it comes to principles of equity and fairness, was it time to call time on things like capital gains tax, discounts and negative gearing?
Well, not if you want to build out the future growth of the Australian economy and you want to give young Australians the same chances as baby boomers. What the government has done is turned around and said, we're going to protect the existing arrangements for those who've accumulated wealth, but we are going to kneecap young Australians in their chance to get ahead. And so this isn't an intergenerational argument that leads to lower taxes.
How can young people get ahead if they can't get into the market at all?
Well, firstly, it's only one part of the story. Young Australians increasingly, and we're getting all these stories through our notthetax.com.au website, where young Australians saying, I invested my house deposit so that I could get into the market, and now the government is going to basically double the tax rate on the gains I secure through that. Young Australians are starting small businesses because they want to get ahead, or side hustle. At every point, the government is targeting their pathway to get ahead, not actually giving them assistance.
Tim Wilson, the Shadow Treasurer there. Well, we are moving along at a frightening pace. Our political correspondent, Tom Crowley, came back on for more analysis of that interview and also the comments from Bill Shorten.
We talk about miserable ghosts sometimes as a descriptor for past leaders. Have you ever heard a happier ghost? Bill Shorten was absolutely, I mean, you could just hear the grin from ear to ear there. Of course, Sally, I support the implementation of my policies and the great ideas that I had all along. So I suppose we'll allow Shorten to have that victory lap, although I suppose winning the election is perhaps what some of the people who are still in government will say is the key difference there. But what I think is really interesting is that what's unfolding over the course of this morning and what you heard from Bill Shorten and Jim Chalmers, this is not just a young and old argument. This is an argument about wealth. I think the first challenge for the government is just this simple broken promise line. But I think that their view is that governments always break promises. The first few days are always consumed by questions about why did you break your promise? But then everybody asks the secondary question, which is, okay, but do we think this is a good idea? And when Labor changed the Stage 3 tax cuts in the last term, they did get a lot of broken promise questions in the first few days, and then they felt that that settled down and that in the end they got away with it. So the three questions that I think people will ask now that will ultimately be the test, more so than this trust question, the first is the intergenerational one, and will 75,000 new homeowners over a decade be enough to convince people that this is materially shifting the generation gap that Labor is identifying, especially given the choices that have been made about grandfathering? I think there's a lot of cynicism naturally out there about any time politicians claim or try to do something about the housing crisis. The Batuta Advocate, to the extent that it speaks and scoffs for a lot of young people, very cynical about the whole grandfathering thing over the last week or so, pulling the ladder up and this idea that the boomers get to keep the tax breaks they had but the next generation misses out. So some cynicism to combat there. Then you get into the wealth arguments, and Bill Shorten was saying it a little bit blunter than what Jim Chalmers and Anthony Albanese had, but it's the same point that this budget is picking the side of wage earners rhetorically over people who, as Shorten said, are sitting on a pile of wealth and earning money off it. Now, they're modest changes in that regard, yes, but as Jim Chalmers said to you, that's a model that the distinction with this tax offset between wages and passive income that Labor plans to build on. I fully expect that the income tax cuts that they'll plan to deliver at the next election will have some component of a distinction between active and passive income. That's a fight that they want to pick. What you heard from Tim Wilson was, you know, I guess trying to talk more broadly about aspiration. That's going to be a really interesting debate in politics. And then the last one is the question of whether this is a tax grab, because even with that offset, it's still $77 billion in extra taxes over the decade. That's another one of the things that Labor will have to grapple with.
Tom Crowley there. So that is all the politics, but what about the impact on people?
I think the negative gearing and capital gains tax changes were good. I think they definitely were catering towards young people. Even after they said they wouldn't change capital gains tax, they did. So I am happy about that.
In New South Wales, prices are still like incredibly high. Wages haven't kept up. And I think also that the supply of housing is still incredibly like an issue.
Live fortnight to fortnight. JobSeeker is now $882 a fortnight. On good fortnights, I can put $100 aside to try and save up for a rate payment. I wouldn't have paid my rates on the due date for 2 or 3 years. Part of that's because of the real estate rise in this area. Despicable, that really, that the homelessness thing for women my age is there at all.
I see it as a positive step, but I think we'll also need major investment in social and affordable housing and broader reforms, and if my generation is actually going to have a fair chance.
I think it's ambitious considering our two-party system right now, but I think, I mean, the most ambitious they could have been was completely getting rid of negative gearing and capital gains tax, which they didn't do.
I don't think it was ambitious at all. I think it was responding to what Australians have been constantly showing that they're struggling, right? I don't think it was ambitious. I think it matched what Australians were saying.
You heard there the voices of Jenny, who's 66 years old, 17-year-old Erica and 19-year-old Jack. And our team, Grace Stranger, Eddie Diamond and Katie McAllister, put all of that together. Well, Kristen O'Connell is a co-founder of the Anti-Poverty Centre and is also a disability pension support recipient. Here's what Sally asked Kristen first.
What did you see in the budget for people who may be doing it tough?
Very little. I think it's really heartening to hear that the community understands what's happening in this budget. Of course, it is always the right thing to do to take steps to reduce inequality by giving fewer handouts to wealthier people. But there is absolutely nothing that is going to provide even the slightest relief to the devastating living cost hikes that we are trying to cope with. And we are now seeing consecutive years of the Albanese government utterly failing to even try and live up to its promise on leaving no one behind. And we're hearing a lot about broken promises today. And the most disturbing broken promises are the ones that are forcing people to be held back to live in poverty, and particularly seeing more funding for income control programs that force people, primarily in the Northern Territory and primarily Aboriginal people, to have their income controlled by the government.
What does daily life look like if someone is unable to work and also someone doesn't own their own house?
I think the first thing that I want to point out here is that if you don't have a job, you might be doing a lot of work. So there's a lot of unpaid work going on in our community, and people on social security payments contribute so much. In addition to that, one in five people on the job seeker payment has a job, and they can't earn enough from the low wages that they're dealing with to get off the job seeker payment or out of poverty. For people who are being forced to apply for jobs, which is what you're required to do to get some of these Centrelink payments, we're also hearing the RBA governor say that unemployment needs to go up for the benefit of the economy. So once again, people are left feeling that they have failed, that individually you are unable to get your life together when all of these structural forces are railed against you. And so there is a deep sense of hopelessness and despair, and especially on days like this, when you can see that the government not only isn't doing anything, but doesn't even seem to consider doing anything or feel it necessary to mention us. We're workers too.
Are there enough changes and improvements when it comes to public housing that you've been looking for?
There are zero positive things to say on that front. Again, great to see that some people who own extra homes will be paying slightly more tax when they sell them. But if you don't do things with that money that actually benefit people who need support, then it doesn't really help, you know? So we're seeing extraordinary cuts to the NDIS that are going to wreak havoc for disabled people and our communities. We're seeing no investment in public housing, which is the fundamental change that needs to happen to really stabilise the private rental market, to ensure all of the extraordinary waitlists around the country can be reduced, and to meaningfully address homelessness. We did see a very tokenistic measure that will put money into the hands of community housing landlords who've been discriminating against young people. And this is being sold as a homelessness measure, but there are no new homes that come with this measure. No more people will be housed as a result of it. It just means we're shuffling one type of homeless person for another.
Just finally, you're on a disability pension support. What's your sense of what's going to happen to those people on the NDIS who are facing some of their supports being cut off?
Yes, I'm also an NDIS recipient. And the rhetoric, frankly, since the Albanese government came to power has been very disturbing. I'm autistic. And autistic people have been demonised by Bill Shorten, by Anthony Albanese and many other people in this government to justify and lay the foundation for these cuts that we're seeing now. I and other autistic people are not going to be the only ones who suffer from these changes, but it's extremely scary time. I know I'm going to lose peers. I know I'm going to lose my support, and I know that my ability to function and participate in society is going to go backwards.
How does that sit for you?
It's devastating to be advocating on your own behalf and on behalf of the people who share your experiences constantly, and to be treated like a number on a balance sheet to be shifted around. We're not economic indicators. We're people who have the interest and capacity and potential to contribute in all sorts of ways. And those contributions are never recognised. And now the little bit of support, the little bit of progress we made is being ripped away.
And that is Kristen O'Connell there, the co-founder of the Anti-Poverty Centre, ending today's special coverage on The Breakfast Wrap of the federal budget. Thank you so much for listening to all of those interviews from Sally Sara. They were produced by our crack Radio National Breakfast team, working hard all across budget day into the night for some of them, and then back up again early this morning. Another bit of audio you should go and listen to today. There's more analysis from Tom and Carrington explaining some of the budget spends that you may have missed. The sleepers, as Tom says. You can find that on ABC Listen. I'm Luke Siddham-Dundon. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow.